Welcome back. We are the Ladies with Gumption and we recap DC TV in a flash. I am your intro person. I was gonna say host. I am May and I'm here with
Tatiana
and Jessica.
And you can find us on Twitter at DC TV Gumption, email us at ladieswgumption@gmail.com. Or you can even send us asks on Tumblr. For Jessica, it's Falling in Love in a Flash. For Tatiana, it's Valerie M. Perez. And for me, it's Her Own Hero Writer. All our podcast episodes are on iTunes, Google Play, and Podomatic. And now we're on Facebook. So you can go like our page, which you can find by searching for Ladies with Gumption, or by typing in facebook.com/DCTVGumption, which is just like our Twitter handle. We received tons of feedback from the last episode, so we greatly appreciate that. We got an email from Erica, who says she enjoys the podcast, but wishes we had discussed Amunet under the female villains trope. Yes, we were going to mention her, but we were running a little bit short on time because we were talking for over 2.5 hours. However, we came to the conclusion that she currently breaks the mold because she's been shown to work for herself and not under anyone. But she does make deals with other villains. But since she's only appeared for 2 episodes, we don't know all that much about all of her motivations.
Like, I kind of have a different feeling about her. Like, I feel like she is, she does break the mold because she's not attached to anyone. But I also feel like she's still there for, she's only there for Caitlyn's story, so there's mm-hmm. not really much meat behind her. She's kind of like in the vein of Black Siren, but she's a lot of bark. She's mostly bark, but Black Siren will actually like bite you. So I feel like with her, she's a little bit tropey in the sense that she's got kind of this like Johnny Depp, Captain Jack Sparrow thing going on with like her hands. And I don't know if that's just the way that Katie Sackhoff like plays her or whatever. But she's very much of a tropey villain for me. But action-wise, like you said, she's only been in 2 episodes. So there's not really a lot that we've learned from her. But she doesn't really have a lot of depth, so.
Right, she doesn't have really much depth. But I do like that she did have a specific backstory bit. Like, even though it was kind of awkward because it was about sexual harassment. But she did specifically say that she used to be powerless and preyed on by men. And then she got powers and decided to use it to prey on others. So yeah, that is already way more than we know about, like, Caitlyn or Wayne.
Like, how you get from, like, that story of the flight attendant to, like, where's the jump from that to becoming, like, a slaver?
Right.
Instead of, like, going after, like, powerful men in the industry, you're, like, selling metas in the black market, you know?
I guess all the metas so far have been men, but yeah, it is kind of still like, so, oh, okay.
Backtracking, we didn't all come to the conclusion. Different conclusions, but yeah. Sort of similar. Also, Jacqueline on Twitter said that she is enjoying the podcast and then we are helping her improve her English, which meant a lot. Thank you, Jacqueline. Miss Minute 42, also on Twitter, was live tweeting her thoughts, which was a lovely thread to read and made me laugh at several points. Aaliyah, who recently found our podcast and is also enjoying what we have to say. And we also received our first iTunes reviews from 2 users, Huz567 and Surprise D Girl. So thank you so much for that. We've been begging and pleading with everyone to give us iTunes reviews for a while, so we really appreciate it. And just in general, thank you so much to everyone for sending us all your feedback and taking the time to let us know your thoughts. If you've sent feedback and we've forgotten to mention you, we apologize. We just want you to know that we are greatly appreciative for all the love and comments.
You mean Surprised Girl?
Yes, Surprised. Yes.
Yes.
Oh my God. Surprised Girl. Wow. Wow. Wow at myself. I can't read. And I wrote that down too. That's really sad. Okay. Surprised Girl. News updates. Krypton.
It made me a surprise, D. You don't know. You don't know what she found in her bed.
You know, if there was a dash, I could have accepted that for myself, but there wasn't, so shame on me. News updates. Krypton, the show people keep forgetting about, like myself, premieres on March 21st on Sci-Fi, and its first season has been confirmed to consist of only 10 episodes. They released the first promo photos from the pilot, and the second episode is called House of L. So the promo photos are a bunch of guys, so we shall see how that goes.
Yeah, no ladies with gumption to be found.
Yes.
Yet. I know Georgina Chapman, is that her name? Exists in the universe somewhere, but I haven't seen what she does.
Young Justice, which is more exciting, premieres in the fourth quarter of 2018, so nearer to the end of the year, and it will be premiering on DC's new digital streaming service. And this podcast, we will be discussing our own experiences as women of color in DC TV fandom and fandom in general, the struggles of standing people of color, characters, and interracial shipping, and we will also discuss issues of colorism and also some of the positive experiences that we've had. So, to take it away today, as our host, will be Jessica.
Yay! So, like, I think Miss Minute 42 on Twitter, she's like, oh, this is going to be spicy. Which, you know, this month is definitely going to be a little bit spicy. So, like, grab your tea, sit under, like, the shadiest tree you can find or whatever, and just enjoy the discussion. So, for this one, I just wanted to start off with an intro into fandom. Like, what was it like being a woman of color pre-DCTV, like your first experience into fandom and TV in general?
I know for me, the main fandoms I'd ever been involved with before DCTV were Harry Potter and Supernatural. And it was strange for the most part because I feel like I'd avoid spaces that went against canon, and so I feel like I avoided most of the nonsense, or at least naively thought that I did. In the case of Supernatural, it was interesting because I went to a convention a few years ago where about 95% of the audience members were like white females, and I really felt strange. It was one of the first times where it was really obvious that I stood out among them. And in online fandom, I started seeing evidence of like internalized sexism, especially when it came to women who would appear on Supernatural who were potential love interests that lasted longer than an episode, and how female fans would be dismissive of them. And then in the end, I think my eyes were more open in fandom spaces when it came to things like Glee and Doctor Who, and not just how some people would just talk about Mercedes and Santana, but also how the show treated them, how they'd always get sidelined for Rachel, and how everyone would hate on Martha on Doctor Who for no apparent reason than to prop up the importance of the white female companion who came before her. And I mean, otherwise there were no other Middle Eastern characters or characters of Middle Eastern descent represented in the things that I watched.
Kathy? Yeah. as for my experience, I was kind of, I was very naive when I first started off because I guess I just didn't, well, actually, okay, to be fair, it's because I wasn't allowed to use the internet all that much or do anything that would involve fandom in any way because of my lovely mom. So I didn't actually like open my eyes to anything about how fandom worked until college. And the fandoms that brought me there or that brought me awareness were Merlin and Gossip Girl, because that's when I first saw specifically how racism operated in a fandom space, which I, for some reason beforehand, thought like, oh, that doesn't exist there because people don't really talk about racism, you know, on the show. So why would it exist outside the show? Specifically, Merlin, you guys probably know, but Guinevere was black. She was played by Angel Colby, and people fucking hated Guinevere. And first off, they would say how ugly she was, how it didn't make any sense, that Arthur and Merlin liked her, and whatever, all this nonsense. And of course, everything that she did was like the worst, most selfish thing ever. And I was like, I'm so confused right now, because like, she's actually the most selfless person. Like, there's no one that is nicer than Gwen. And then, you know, at some point it's like, oh shit, it's because she's black. That's why they're like this. Now then everything makes sense. And then Gossip Girl was, first off, everyone's fucking white in Gossip Girl. Everyone's the whitest. Everyone's so white. But then you have Jessica Jure, who is literally, I think she's 1/4 black. Like, she's Hungarian. And most of her is Hungarian. But somewhere there's some black. And you can see it sometimes in her hair. And what do you know? That's literally the one thing that people would always harp on about how much they hated Vanessa, the character she played, because her hair was so ratty. Her hair was disgusting. Her hair was awful. And I was like, what the fuck is happening right now? But anyway, and that's another character that was so selfless and was always doing shit for other people. And she was the only character who wasn't allowed to call other people on their shit. Anyway, so my first entrance into fandom was incredibly annoying and disheartening. But it did teach me a lot. So, you know, thanks for that, fandom. And then in terms of Latino representation, either you were like the prostitute or like the maid or whatever, or you were Ugly Betty. So when America Ferrera showed up, I was so excited. And of course I watched Ugly Betty, and I made everyone on my floor watch it. And then, of course, all my friends in college would call me Ugly Betty, and would like post pictures on Facebook of Ugly Betty and like tag me in them, because I don't know, I guess I was like the only one that they knew, and they were like, oh, that's this is Ugly Betty.
That's kind of, I mean, you know, I guess like the show was more positive than the name implied still to tag in that. Do you have feelings about that? Take it like positively, or is it kind of like a dig at
me? I mean, I feel like at the time I was like, oh, it's like kind of cute, but it's also like, I feel like you're saying that, you know, like obviously she's not ugly, but it's, I don't know, I guess it's like, you know, that it's only happening because I am known as being Latina, right? Because if I wasn't, then they wouldn't, like, I have the glasses and I have black hair, you know, but like, that wouldn't be, it's not the first thing that you think of. It was a little like uncomfortable, I guess, you know, like I was like, I guess. And actually very recently I was on set somewhere and I was holding a sign that said, this is what America looks like, for a protest, right? And this guy comes up to me and he's like, this is what America Ferrera looks like. And I was like, yes. But anyway, that's all.
For like, for me, for like most of my TV watching life, I would be largely considered like the general audience fan, like general audience member. I've only really ever been in two fandoms prior to DC TV, and that was like Harry Potter and Game of Thrones, and those are primarily like the book fandoms. So like getting on message boards and like theories and arguing with people that Harry and Hermione are not a thing, and like stuff like that.
Oh my god, don't even get me started.
So like, I
mean, they aren't. So.
FYI, spoiler alert, yes. For anyone that, you know, didn't know, that's not a thing. But I really, like, really didn't have, like, much experience in terms of what it takes to be in fandom, or, like, even in, like, shipping fandom, because it's, like, a whole other level. But even as, like, a general audience viewer, I still feel like I was, like, picking up on things based on either, like, sudden moon swings in the narrative or my reception to the story that I could look back on post-mortem from the fandom perspective and be like, okay, yeah, that makes sense why. Even, like, going far back, it's Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. Like, I was a Power Rangers fan growing up, and, you know, even then I could, like, remember wondering, like, why the Black Ranger had to be black, and why the Yellow Ranger had to be Asian, and, you know, the Pink Ranger gets a skirt on her suit because she's a girl, but Yellow Ranger doesn't get a skirt in her suit. And then, like, Kimberly, the Pink Ranger, she got to be paired with the Red Ranger, who's the leader, and then there's, like, a little bit of triangle where she got with Tommy later on, so she got both of, like, the male leads in the story, and, like, Trini is stuck with the Blue Ranger, Billy, who's, like, the white male nerd, and, like, no offense, but, like, some offense to Billy, but, you know, you can, like, pick up, like, you know, this, like, why is Kimberly getting all these things, and, you know, she's pink, she's got a skirt, and all this kind of stuff, and Trini's just, like, being paid dust or whatever. And then if you go back and, like, look at the Power Rangers franchise in general, there's, like, a whole ton of, like, shady bullshit behind the scenes for that. And then even more of a recent example would be, like, the unraveling of the show Twisted in just, like, one season. The main character, Jo, is a white girl. She has, like, a one-sided crush on her friend, Danny, who's played by Avon Jogia. I don't know how you say his last name. Who is, like, half Indian, half white. And then third friend in their little group was Lacey, played by Kylie Bunbury. Jo had a crush, one-sided crush on Danny, and Danny was into Lacey, and Lacey had these, like, repressed feelings for Danny because he went to jail for a crime that he didn't commit, and so there was, like, a whole lot of stigma around him, and she had all this kind of, like, anger and repressed fear about falling for him, and so they had kind of a thing going on the first half of the season, and then in the second half of the season, it just completely unraveled. Everything went 180. Suddenly Danny was in love with Jo for, like, no apparent reason, and Lacey is suddenly a lesbian now, and, you know, like, the whole show, like, unraveled. And I barely even skimmed the surface of that fandom because I was really into Danny and Lacey and I was excited for the show. But even on, like, Facebook, there's just, like, tons of, like, all the vitriol that was spewed towards Lacey for just existing and breathing, and a ton of, like, hate and how Jo deserved Danny because Jo liked Danny and believed he was innocent, even though that Danny thought she was a sister for a minute. You know, like, all of this stuff that the narrative was telling me, this is how it's supposed to be. Just getting through, like, the fandom comments and all that shit, and then seeing 1B happen, and that show, like, imploded before even, like, the season finale. They kind of, like, destroyed their own show. Like, this whole show imploded because they went with, like, the most racist part of the fandom. So I really didn't even get into any other fandoms before DCTV.
Like you, I barely dipped my toe in the Twisted fandom because at that point I already knew what fandom was like. But I did watch it, and I was I loved how they were doing Danny and Lacey. But like you said, even calling Jo the main character, why the fuck would Jo be the main character when it's Danny who's been accused of murdering his aunt or whatever it was, you know? And, like, he comes back and it's, like, the mystery's about him. So, like, why is Joe constantly being centered? And why is her pain of her unrequited crush on Danny, like, even relevant in the grand scheme of things? Right. If Danny were a white man, it would be his show. And then Joe having an unrequited crush on him would be, like, 3 seconds. And, like, it would just be there to prove how, like, macho and awesome he is. But instead, it's, like, because she has feelings for him, he has to eventually give in to her. And you know that the writers didn't actually conceive it that way in the first half because of the fact that they actually cared about how they put Danny and Lacey together. But for whatever reason, they decided that they would be better off if they listened to the crazy people who sound just like they sound in every fandom. Yeah. They say all the exact same things that they've always said about any black female character that steps out of the box they've designated for themselves.
And circling back to Doctor Who, the way that people would say things about Martha. So Martha was the first black companion on Doctor Who, for those who did not watch the show. And it got to the point where it was ridiculous because people were calling her abusive, and how could she say that she was into the Doctor, you know, after Rose left, who was a prior companion, he was in love with her. And then it was like this big deal, as if Martha was the worst person to ever walk the planet just because she dared to have emotions. People acted like it was a personal insult to Rose, even though the two women had never even met each other. Like, never met each other. So it's not like Martha walked in and then knew all of these things. So fandom treated her like shit. And to this day, when I talk about it with people, there will be some people who will tell me that she's their least favorite companion, and they can't even tell me why.
Yeah, it's even when speaking to, and I didn't watch Doctor Who, like, I started with Amy and Rory, and then I went back and watched later, you know, like, watched the earlier episodes later, so I wasn't at all involved in the fandom. But even today, when I talk about Martha with people who are otherwise totally reasonable, like, you think that they know what's up, you know, at least in terms of, like, in real life, they know how to speak about in racial terms, but in the fandom, I guess they don't, because they'll be like, oh, yeah, no, I don't like Martha because she's not well written. Oh, because the actress wasn't very good. Oh, because it's just like, it was just kind of like sad. Like, she was just kind of like a sad character. Or just like, because I was just too upset about Rose. That's why. And I was like, yeah, but you were, you know, you were upset about Amy, and then they didn't fucking hate Clara, even though Clara was literally a mystery inside a box, inside of Enigma, inside of a whatever.
Right.
And then speaking of the other fucking character that drives me nuts in terms of Doctor Who was Danny Pink. Like, Danny Pink shows up. He's literally just a nice dude who likes Clara, and Clara likes him. And once he finds out about the Doctor, he's like, you know what? You do what you gotta do. I don't like it, or I don't want to be part of it, but I'm gonna be here, you know, when you get home, it's cool. And people do backflips to try to make him, like, the master in disguise, or talk about how he's controlling and abusive, and he's actually trying to tear the Doctor and Clara apart. And it's like, how do you watch one thing and then see the total opposite? And they do it every single time.
Mm-hmm.
While we're picking up on these trends and fandom bullshit and excuses, like, what are some of the trends in Hollywood that stood out to you as a viewer and watching as a woman of color?
I think for me specifically, it always stands out that all of the Middle Eastern characters played terrorists, which is a major stereotype and pisses me off. And they rarely, if ever, play anything else. So, like, Homeland gives us jobs. Thanks, guys. And if any Middle Eastern or North African actor happens to even be in a show or a movie, their culture is primarily what represents them, and they have very little characterization otherwise. So they're there to tell the white person about their country or about the religion or whatever. And so that's a problem. And then also kind of like the obnoxious, quote-unquote, exotic and mysterious Arab woman, or that annoying trend that happened for a while where Lebanese women were just mentioned as the flavors of the week, like that one episode on How I Met Your Mother. The need to always have some white character around, like in the upcoming live-action Aladdin adaptation where it isn't even needed because they're in another country and it's their country, you know, so I don't know where the white character fits in. And then the stereotype of the cartel Latino characters who are always violent, trying to leave the drug business or something like that. And then there are the black gang members who are always portrayed as the bad guys, or in some shows you won't even see a black person until the white protagonist ends up in jail. Or the one, you know, black girl in every iteration of media that has a majority white cast and never has much of a love life and plays second fiddle to the white women. And the primary example, and I was watching Saved by the Bell reruns like a while back, and I came to the realization that on this show, all of the characters, even fucking Screech, who was like the most annoying person on the show, got to have a long-term love interest at some point, except for Lisa. And that was just like this big realization to me, because I watched it as a kid, so you know, you absorb these things, but you don't really notice it in the way as you do when you're an adult. The media's constant praising and hiring of mediocre white actors, or the wrong myth that diversity doesn't sell. The primary example that pisses me off all the time is Ridley Scott, who directed a bunch of white people in Egypt in Exodus, Gods and Kings, because he, and I quote, couldn't cast Muhammad from so-and-so from such-and-such because it wouldn't get financed, and that no one will see the movie with a more diverse cast. And the excuse is always that they cast based on who's more talented, as if they can't find a person of color who is. And then the diversity trend on, like, Riverdale, for example, where you have Josie and the Pussycats and Reggie, but they practically really don't exist on the show, unfortunately.
Yeah. Like, I remember watching, like, Saved by the Bell, and, you know, like, little me is, like, thinking, I'm like, why the fuck is Lisa on Ferris Group? Like, that's so rude. And you're, like, you're right, like, with Riverdale, even, like, if you just look at the season alone, I could probably count on my hands the number of lines that Josie has said that was not backed up by a melody or a beat. And that's just her. And, like, she's the lead Pussycat. Like, the other two girls, I don't know, like, how frustrated they have to be. It's, like, gotta be the easiest check in the world because they don't say anything. They're not allowed to say anything. They're just there to, like, be standing props in the background. Like, Josie, Reggie, we get, like, a flash of that. And then suddenly, now, it's not happening because Cheryl needs a storyline, so Josie has to prop Cheryl's single white female storyline and not have her own with Reggie. Yeah, like you said, they don't really exist to themselves.
It's sad that Riverdale is actually, like, the biggest and best example of a cliche trope of, like, token diversity that's been occurring, you know, for however many years, and then Riverdale comes around under the guise of even more and better diversity and does it worse than everyone else has been lately. It is insane. But back to what you said about, you know, diversity doesn't sell, like, the worst part about that is that people will then say, like, oh, well, create your own work. Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh, well, you need to have your own diverse characters. Like, you shouldn't really spend already established white characters. They belong to us. And then you do go out and create your own work and try to get it sold. They're like, no, you can't, because, like, white people aren't going to see it, so it will not matter. So it's like, well, then how are we supposed to? How are we supposed to create new work if you won't let them take what already belongs to the whites, and you won't put out things that the whites don't want to see? So yes, that is a trend. And in terms of, like, character tropes and stuff, like, obviously, like, the over-sexualized and, like, dumb Latina characters that used to be everywhere, and right now, I guess, Sofia Vergara in Modern Family is, like, the elevated version of that, because they're like, it's like she's like that, and we're gonna make that joke every episode. But see, she's also a really good mom. And then, of course, the, like you said, when it's a black woman, that she doesn't have her own life, she's only there for the white character, and either we don't know what she likes and we don't know what she does because she's Melody or she's Valerie and she's just there to say three words, or it's like, oh, she's really aggressive and you're like, don't mess with her, she don't need no man.
Well, yeah, like, kind of like building off of that, I mean, you've also got the smart Asian stereotype that, you know, they're usually the high school nerd in the math and science, you know, that kind of thing. You've also got, like, the ghetto black girl or her cousin, the sassy black girl that always, you know, the roll in the neck and has, like, all these one-liners and, oh, she's so cool, but she also doesn't have a life because she's also the black girl BFF to whatever the primary white character is. She could sometimes be the mammy whenever the main white female protagonist has problems. She's there to solve all her problems, and she doesn't have any problems of her own because she's taken care of, you know, all these other characters. A strong, independent, don't need no man, woman, the token black man, symbol of diversity TM, with no real outside life outside of this white male protagonist, kind of like the black best friend, the male version for him. And if he does well enough, if he's palatable enough to the female audience, maybe they'll give him a white female love interest to kind of center him and anchor him in that world, that he is the acceptable black person, the magical Negro, the black person that shows up with, like, special powers or abilities and is kind of, like, otherworldly, but also their primary focus is to help the main white protagonist through their crucible or whatever it is their situation requires. The idea in Hollywood, and we'll talk about this later, that there can only be, like, it's like Highlander. There can only be one top black actress at a time, you know, in general. And it's usually one skin tone, too. I think May, you said it earlier, like, all, you know, white mediocre actors get their big breaks all the time. Like, studios will take a chance on them, and that's how you get, you know, blonde number 354 leading her own franchise, you know, hint, hint, Jennifer Lawrence. Like, her big break came off of, like, Hunger Games. I'm not really sure if anyone knew her before then. I certainly didn't. But it's very difficult for there to be, like, a black Jennifer Lawrence, like, her big break in the same way. That would, you know, someone, with, like, a studio that would take a chance on her to lead a very popular franchise like that. A lot of those trends that keep coming up and keep occurring, and it's like you said, Tassie, like, how do you break through that when you won't let us enter this space, but then you won't also give us space to create our own things and have that prosper? So it's kind of like, where are we supposed to go? Like, where are we supposed to fit in, you know?
Yes, that reminds me of what I was going to say before. It's the movie Drive, which is another example of this, especially in terms of, like, the dumb Latina trope, which is that originally it's based on a book, and the character's name is Irena, and she's Latina, like, just like her gangbanger husband who's getting into trouble that Ryan Gosling has to save, right? But the director decided that he had to cast a white woman, like, he cast Carey Mulligan, because he thought that Ryan Gosling had to feel the need to protect her, and he wouldn't be able to if it was a Latina. And he literally said that.
Speaking of characters and the need, like, Ryan Gosling feeling the need to protect Carey Mulligan, that is, like, the Latina representation of the character, we kind of get into a little bit of shipping, or even just, like, standing a person of character in, like, a TV show. What were kind of the struggles that you guys faced or feel like you faced when you have a new TV show and there's a character of color that you really like the added level of when you're trying to ship that character, usually in an interracial setting?
I think the struggle is, like, the realization that you always have to prove to people why this person of color is your favorite character, or why you like them, or, like, why this interracial couple is good and whatnot, you know? You have to list a bunch of reasons and go through a laundry list of reasons to validate them just for existing. Whereas, like, the, you know, white character who's probably, like, fourth build is like, oh, they said this cool thing, I ship them, you know, I will die for them, and all this other dramatic shit that you're like, okay, but, like, they were literally just there for 2 seconds. I don't understand all of a sudden why they're so popular. And I going back to, like, the Martha thing, you know, how you just have to explain to people why this person happens to be feeling the way that they're feeling. Like, I don't understand why people don't think that they're valid, you know? Whereas other people get breaks because of their race when they're not people of color. So, like, everyone will always find a copious amount of reasons to like and defend white characters, but throw words like predator, or this person's emotionally abusive, or this interracial couple is like siblings, or it just doesn't feel right, they don't have chemistry, you know, all of these things towards characters of color for no reason other than they happen to like their white fave, you know, and they just can't accept that, and that's terrible.
Yeah, in terms of having to validate why you like a character, that I've definitely seen several instances of that, and, you know, experienced them, I guess. Like, Suits, my favorite character in Suits is Jessica Pearson. And then I had this guy once ask me, like, well, why do you even like her? Is it just because she's black? And I was like, I don't, like, why would that be the reason that I like her? And if it was, who cares? But it's not the reason that I like her. So, like, why would you think that there isn't other reasons? Like, she's the boss of the whole law firm, you know, and, like, and she's a badass. And she also, like, mothers Harvey when she doesn't have to, etc. So anyways, and then also more recently, and more on topic, a friend of mine did once ask me, like, he was like, I don't understand why Iris is such a big fandom. Like, why do people love Iris so much? And he was not someone that I would have expected to ask that. So, I mean, the only thing that I could say in response was just like, well, why do people like Loki so much? Or, like, why do people like Thor? Like, what is the reason? And he's like, okay, I see what you're saying. I don't care what anyone says. People's feelings on characters and shows tells you something about mm-hmm. who they are. Because you can feel more for the character than you do for people in real life, or than you express for people in real mm-hmm. life. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you tell me how you feel about a character, then I know how you secretly must feel about me. You know?
I had to explain to a friend once. She's like, I don't understand why Barry loves Iris. And I'm just like, and I literally whipped out, like, a list in my head. I was like, okay, well, you really don't understand, because I will tell you. And there's no reason for me to be explaining this to you for the next 15 minutes, because it is literally right there. I don't understand why I had to do this, you know? Like,
right, it's like you could have saved yourself 15 minutes if you just had better comprehension skills.
Yeah, if you just, like, watch the show, when Mary tells you, like, listen to every episode, watch what you feel.
But yeah, it is one thing that was sort of a struggle of of standing or enjoying characters of color is just how much fandom or viewers will hate a character of color more when they don't conform to a stereotype. Like, they're really comfortable with the black best friend or with the, you know, whatever. Like, they're really comfortable with any kind of stereotype. Like, oh yeah, I love her so much, she's so great. But the second that she actually acts like her own character and has her own desires that doesn't cater to the white characters on the show, especially the white man or if it's a white female lead, then suddenly they hate the character. So once they step out of the box, suddenly they hate the character, or suddenly have a million things wrong with the character, or they're just not well written. Like, every other character on the show, every other white character is really well written except for that one. And even Sisko, who people have expressed a great deal of love for, but who every once in a while has a storyline like being angry and buried for Flashpoint, suddenly gets a crazy amount of hate because he's not doing exactly what Barry wants him to do. And that just shows you, like, how much he falls into a stereotype, even though it's actually, like, a good one for the most part. Like, we enjoy that Sisko is a tech genius. He's, like, a Latino tech genius. He's not, you know, a poor boy with no family or whatever. But as long as he's in that box of, like, tech sidekick, then people love him. But when he does something else, suddenly people are like, wait a second, that's not right. Go back, Sisko.
Tech sidekick are, like, supporting Caitlin and talking about how great Caitlin is or, like, how much he wants to hang out with his two best friends. You know, to the point where people will try and turn him into a child for the other two characters.
Infantilize him.
He's a grown-ass man, and he's equal in the threesome of Barry, Caitlin, Sisko in terms of their... Don't do that. I see your faces. But, like, in terms of, like, them being, like, Star Labs friends, he's the strongest point with it's him and Barry, and it's him and Caitlin, but they kind of use his relationship to both of them to infantilize him and make it about Barry and Caitlin and Sisko, like, propping up their relationship. Kind of how on Arrow with Diggle, and Diggle having a relationship with Felicity, and Diggle having a relationship with Oliver, but a lot of the times, partly David Ramsey does it to himself because he, you know, perpetuates the thing about propping up Oliver and Felicity, but that's kind of like his main characteristic to some parts of the fandom, that he is, if he did not like Oliver and Felicity together, I don't think that he would be as popular as he is in fandom. Back to, like, for me as a general audience viewer, it seemed as if, like, standing a person of color character on a TV show is, like, constantly rooting for the underdog because, like, you know, you rarely get fed on the show. You're watching the show, you're not, like, you know, into all the behind scenes, when were they filming, and all of this spoiler stuff. You know, it's like a Where's Waldo thing. Like, where's my fave? You know, will they show up this episode? Will they get a storyline? How much screen time will they have? Trying to root for it. And that's not even knowing all of the seedy underground of fandom, like, telling the writers on Twitter or on Facebook or, like, wherever, how much they hate your fave and how much they don't want your fave on the show. But, you know, unbeknownst to you, there's, like, people rooting against you and your character and fandom and, like, trying to remove the importance of the person that you want to see the most on the show. That's not even, like, getting into that, the actual fandom, having to, like, battle, like, the demons and their particular brand of, like, quote-unquote logic on why your favorite character doesn't need to be treated with the same respect as some of the other characters on the show. And it kind of, like, freaks me out, like, some of the backflips and stretching, like, people have to go through to demonize someone that hasn't done anything within the narrative of the show. Really go into the fandom and see all of the excuses that people make. It kind of, like, opens your eyes to, like, what that person really feels and must feel about people that look like me or that look like you two, you know, in real life. Because how can you not have compassion for this person on the show?
Yeah, definitely. Like, and when they're not demonizing them, they're like, oh, this precious cinnamon roll that I love so much.
Yeah, and that reminds me, like, recently I saw, like, a gift set on Tumblr, the interview that Allison Williams, who played Rose in Get Out, she did, like, a late night interview, and she couldn't understand why people on the street were always coming and asking her, like, but Rose is really a victim, right? Your character is not, like, a good character. She's not really redeemable in any way. There's no hints in there that she's redeemable. It's, like, written that way. It's pretty obvious in the narrative of the movie that this is the way that she is. And yet, there are still people that come up to Allison on the street and it's like, but she's not, right? She's really a victim, right? Like, she's also, like, a victim. Like, the black guy is a victim, but she's also a victim too, right? You know, it's kind of like that she is one way, but people do so many backflips and go out of their way to make this character not who the show or the movie tells you that they are because they're white. So, like, the Kylo Ren and the Rose from Get Out and Loki from Thor.
Yeah, and sometimes the writers do that to themselves. Killer Frost. but yeah, I was going to say, like, the other, like, it's more insidious to me because it's less obvious that they're doing it, but when they act like they love the characters of color, but are always constantly ignoring them, or, like, they're never included in fan works, they're never included in fanfic, and people don't ship them with anyone, especially in fandom where you ship anyone, any two white characters that just, like, pass by each other, or that, like, have one trait in common, suddenly there's an explosion of shipping for them, especially if it's two white men.
Yeah, and but if it's a black woman, for example, who happens to get a love interest, which is rarely the case, they're like, oh, well, I really like her, but, you know, I think she's better on her own. Why does she need a man?
Yeah. Isn't that hashtag feminism?
Right, exactly.
Yep.
Like, a post will start off as complimentary, and then as it goes on, it'll get, like, really insulting. Like, oh, well, in this season, I really like this person. And then afterwards, after she started getting, like, more story, all of a sudden you start saying all these insulting things about her. And, she was fine. She or he were fine when they got, like, 2 minutes of screen time, but now they're not for you.
Yeah, that's, like, it's most indicative that the time that fandom at large loved Iris the most, you know, and by fandom, I just mean, like, the random white people on the internet, was 2A. Like, that's when they were like, oh, Iris is suddenly so mature now, and she knows her place now, basically. This is where I like her. And then Barry remembered that he loves her forever, and they're all like, oh, Iris is bad again. I don't know what happened. It's like, as she gets more narrative importance, I hate her more.
Well, like, speaking of Iris and the DC TV fandom, let's go over into that topic. How has your experience been in the DC TV fandom specifically, or in condom fandom in general?
Go for it, Tati.
Oh, okay. Me?
Switch off. All
right. Well, comics at large, as you can imagine, is a cesspool. And I did once have, like, a bunch of fanboys in my mentions for an entire week because it was one tweet that I tweeted to Jeff Johns about a Green Lanterns movie. And I was like, oh, I hope you include Jessica Cruz, because it's so great seeing a Latina superhero, and the fact that she has anxiety disorder is really important. And then a bunch of people sent me all these essays about how Jessica could not get a movie before Hal and John did. And I was like, I didn't say that she was going to. And they're like, Jessica, like, Hal needs to do this, and Kyle needs to do this, and this guy needs to do this, and, like, 300 Green Lanterns I've never heard of need to do something before Jessica can. And they're like, do you even read comics? Do you know that she got the ring a different way? And I was like, have you ever fucking seen a comic movie actually do the origin correctly? They're not going to tell you how she got the ring. It doesn't fucking matter, you morons. But anyway, so that's what comic fandom is like in general. For DC TV specifically, I haven't been personally attacked myself in the DC TV fandom. And that's true. I have been. But not because I am Latina. Just for other reasons. So, but it is kind of, you know, like, just watching how fandom reacts to different characters and how they will react to you, like, when you say that you're an Iris fan, for example. They automatically assume something about you, and I think you know what it is that they assume. But it's also not just that, but, like we already said with Cisco, you know, like, I thought it was great that everyone loved Cisco so much until I realized that they loved him as, like, a sexless robot. It's like, oh, I love him if he's just, like, the weird, nerdy guy who tries to hit on women that the women don't like him, you know, like, it makes sense to me that when Lisa shows up, Cisco thinks that she wants to talk to Barry, and the only reason that she wanted to talk to Cisco was because it was a trap. Yeah, and I remember, like, there used to be, like, confessions, like, you know, those awesome confession blogs, where people would be like, oh, I just can't see Cisco with anyone, I hope they don't put him with someone, because I think that would ruin it. Alright,
I'm so cool. Glad he has a romance now, take that.
Yes, and now we've got Cisco and Cynthia, which is great, and people seem receptive of it, but it's more like, it's one of those, like, performative things where it's like, oh yeah, I love that. Never seen or heard from again, right? Like, it's like the true Cisco fans in fandom like it, and they do things with it, and then no one else, like, does not appear anywhere. No one cares about it.
Only to, like, break down Barry and Iris. Like, oh, there's...
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. I'm not racist. I love Cisco and Cynthia. They're a healthy relationship, unlike Barry and Iris.
Exactly.
Never talks about Cisco and Cynthia again. So, yes, they only like him to prop Caitlin and Barry, even though he's literally never done that in his life, but that's fine. The other thing, too, is just seeing how much women in fandom will self-insert with characters, like, to an extent that I feel like, I guess I've always seen it, like, we've always known, like, you pick, like, one, and there can only be one, right? There can only be one special girl. But perhaps because so many fandoms, it's like they're all white, so you're just like, oh, it's sexism. So it's just like, oh, you just pick one girl and then you fight. Like, obviously you choose Blair because she's the underdog, and now you hate Serena. But now that we see a different dynamic because Iris is black, it just shows how much more of a problem it is, or just like how much larger the scope of it all is, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, for me, I was once told that I didn't know what I was talking about, or that I didn't know comics characters, even though I grew up watching and reading comic, you know, about comic characters and all that stuff, just because I dared to make a criticism in one of my reviews about, I don't even know who it was about. The person had a lot to say and basically insulted me a couple of times, saying that I was stupid in a long thread on Twitter. So that was fun. There's also always the surprise when I tell people I'm into comics and comic book related shows, which is really annoying because, and it's usually the guys specifically who just look at you and be like, oh, I didn't know you were into that, and that's really obnoxious. Also, a couple people who came, so I don't really tend to fight people on Twitter unless they come in straight into my mentions. So there were a couple people who were pissed that I was calling Iris a strong leader and then came at me for the usual reasons. Or first, my favorite, though, I wrote an article earlier this year about James and how he was being done wrong on Supergirl, and there were so many racists who came out of the woodwork then to tell me that I should respect the Supergirl writers, and how dare I call Mon-El a former slave owner, which is something he actually was in canon. Thankfully, like Tati, I haven't been personally insulted because of my ethnicity yet, but I'm not dead yet, so it'll probably happen at some point. Largely, it's just like insults of my opinions regarding certain characters. But it's largely like the nastier entitled fanboys or the self-inserting fangirls, like you said, and they just really want us to shut up about our opinions.
Yeah, like, I'm kind of like you, man. I kind of stay out of, like, stay away from, like, the uglies and, like, fight me Twitter. Because, like, for the sake of my own mental health, because that's not, like, when I want to go into fandom, I want to go into something, like, positive. Like, the reason, like, I got so into DC TV fandom because of The Flash and, like, Iris West, and I wanted to know everything about the show and that year, because that's also when I got into The Flash. I didn't get into it from the very beginning. I think I got into it midway through season one, and then that I ran out of episodes to binge, and so I, like, well, now I gotta go back and watch Arrow, because I gotta see what's going on. I gotta see how the universe connects here. But that was also the year that Sleepy Hollow came out with Nicole Beharie as the lead in that show. And it was like, oh my God, the lead of a show and she's a black woman? Wow. And Sleepy Hollow went down a different route. But seeing her on that show and seeing on The Flash with Iris West being black and played by Candace Patton, I was like, oh my God, she's the female lead and, like, the love interest to, like, a white superhero, and she's not a stereotype, and people love her, and people want to protect her. Like, this is crazy. Like, you know, I'm in, like, a different dimension. Like, this is awesome. So, really, like, wanted me to get into the fandom for, like, positive kind of thing. So I try to stay mostly away from, like, the uglies. I do get into, like, a lot of debates and stuff, but I try not to, just for me, like, it's just draining, you know, taking on all that negativity constantly. And I think probably the most annoying thing for me, because, like you girl said, like, we are all, like, comic fans, grew up watching, like, the shows and stuff like that, even before DC TV and The Flash premiered on CW. It's usually, like, comic fanboys, and I use that term loosely, because they come up with, like, they have, like, all of these, like, followers and these huge followings and stuff, but they come up with the most obtuse shit and, like, obviously wrong theories and the blandest fan casts ever, but they've got, like, all of these people that are, like, following them and, like, validating their opinion. And there's no space for, you know, other opinions. We have, like, Geeks of Color on Twitter. We've got some, like, little pockets, but I feel like a lot of the major influencers are these white fanboys with, you know, thousands of YouTube subscribers or followers on Twitter or whatever social media platform it is, and just talking about, like, the most, like, wrong shit ever. And I want to, like, scream, you know, if there's a black Iris West. There's no way that her grandchild is playing by, like, Chandler fucking Griggs. Like, Bart Allen. like, what universe would that make sense? But they have, you know, all the major influencers are largely, like, white fanboys. Or they have, like, the fan cast, and every fan cast that they make of a character is usually a white character. Doesn't matter if they're not white in comic canon. Like, Dick Grayson is always a bunch of white dudes, from, like, Zac Efron to, you know, or all any redhead is always Emma Stone. There's no diversity or anything like that. So that it's kind of, like, frustrating, you know, to get the same little packaged opinions all over the place. That's kind of, like, why I'm glad that we have kind of started this podcast and forum to kind of get, like, a different view. And hopefully other people want to see, like, a different viewpoint within, like, the larger, like, comic fandom.
And even when it's not comic fanboys, like you guys are right, like, it's, like, the reviewers, too, or, like, the media that is surrounding these fandoms. Mm-hmm. Because they are mostly white, and they perpetuate the same white biases. Like you, the reason that I watched The Flash was because I saw that Candace Patton was playing Iris West in the trailer, like, because I was going to stay away from it, because Arrow had burned me so hard, I was like, fuck any other, you know, DC show, they're just going to do this again, but then I saw the trailer, and I was like, wait a second, so then I watched, and I watched from the start, but I watched in a vacuum, like, I just watched without checking anything for, like, the first 5 episodes, and then after episode 5, I was so excited, I was like, oh, the rooftop scene, you know, like, oh, maybe Iris is going to work with The Flash, or whatever, so I went to go look at some reviews, and I was reading the reviews, and they were all, like, so many people were so dismissive of Iris, or just saying that she was, like, the weak link in the show, and I was like, wait a second, that's why the fuck I'm watching the show, and so that's why I joined the fandom. Like, that's why I got in, and I was like, well, let me make some fucking gift sets, let me tweet some shit about how much I love Iris. Yeah, and that's partially why I'm, you know, writing reviews and shit now. Like, that's why I do what I do, because I was like, oh, I'm gonna write for Comic Commerce so that I can say nice things about Iris sometimes.
Yeah, I got into it the same way, writing at least for The Flash, because so I came in much later, a little bit later than you ladies. I came in at the beginning of season 2 and was just watching it weekly. Then I had binge watched the first season on Netflix because my brother was like, you should watch the show and I think you'd really like it. And so that's how I got into it. So I binge watched it in my own little bubble on my couch on Netflix. And then season 2, I was watching it and up to like maybe episode 6. So I started live tweeting it, and that's when I started finding out all of this shit. So I also looked up some reviews and things like that just to see what people are saying. And I think with the exception of like Angelica Bastian at Vulture, who doesn't write Flash reviews anymore, was the only sane person who was writing stuff and actually mentioned Iris, for that matter, or even Cisco. Yeah, that's how I got into it too.
Yeah, like, so like talking about what left an impression on you the most and where you like realized the struggle in the Flash fandom or the DC TV fandom was like truly, truly real. And I think for me, like you guys said, coming into it as a casual viewer, I think I was much more forgiving of a lot of stuff because I'm like, you know, fandom's gonna fandom. It's all water off a duck's back. You know, they're crazy, but the show's not crazy, so whatever. But there were some of the things that kind of annoyed me. For example, like you were saying, Tati, with like the reviews and how like biased they were, and like the media would constantly ask Danielle about her like quote unquote chemistry with Grant, or about Barry and Caitlin working together, or about is Snowberry going to happen, and all these things. And you know what? Fine. In the beginning, there, I think before the show, there was an open possibility that there may be like a triangle there, or whatever. It wasn't really anything that was in the show.
Can I just say, as a casual viewer who never went online in the first season, that didn't exist. There was no chemistry. There was nothing. And I was, so when I found out, I was like so confused because yeah. I don't know what the fuck they were talking about.
I think it was like even before the pilot of the, when they're trying to like promote the show, and you know, of course, like ships on CW, something's like, oh, there could be like a triangle, blah, 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 blah. But it was never something that was actually present in the show. But they would ask her about it constantly. And then like the way she would respond to it is like, you know, if you want to tease, you know, you gotta do what you gotta do, sell the show or whatever. But the way that she teased it was that, you know, oh yeah, there's something there, but she would not bring up the fact that it wasn't her storyline. Her storyline at that time was Snowstorm and her relationship with Ronnie. So that was never brought up. The fact that Barry was clearly in love with Iris was never brought up as the impetus for why this wasn't gonna happen right now if that's the way that she
Yeah, she would say shit like, oh, they're coworkers, so it would be hard.
Right. Not the fact that Barry's not in love with you and he's in love with Iris. Like that's
too,
you know,
bad because he married the coworker of his dreams, so
right,
we can, you know, drop.
Like that kind of thing, the, you know, being the only girl. But then I think what really got me, just from like the show itself, and more specifically whatever like fucking intern that ran the Flash Twitter, but with Keenan Lonsdale, he got cast and made his casting announcement on Twitter. Candace was the first person online that was like congratulating him, you know, welcoming him to the show. She was the first person that met him, period, because they did a chemistry test together for him to get the part. And so he knew her, and she was, as Iris, she's the closest person to him within the show. But the Flash Twitter, and then later on, Grant and Danielle and, you know, some of the rest of the cast both also offered their congratulations and stuff to online. But the Flash Twitter only retweeted Grant and Danielle. They didn't retweet Candace at all. And I was like, seriously? Like, that's kind of like, I see you now. Like, I see you. And it was really, like, shocking to me because, like, all these other uglies online and in fandom and the media or whatever else can, you know, say whatever shit they want to say. But when your own show doesn't do anything to support you, like, what the fuck, you know? Like, that's the kind of, like, I felt that. Like, I don't know how Candace must have felt about that, but I felt that in my core. And I don't think I've ever looked at the Flash Twitter the same. And they still don't. They've gotten, like, a little bit better at it. I wish we had, like, the Legends of Tomorrow intern for our Flash Twitter, because they are very consistent. They treat everyone equally, and they, like, retweet everyone and support all of their casts, and it's just not the same with the Flash Twitter. What about you, ladies? Any other, like, strong impressions that just made you, like, ugh?
I mean, just in general, like I was saying, I came in late, but I feel like the struggle really became real for me. There was an instance where I was, so going into season two, I was just watching, and I'm just like, well, where the hell is Iris? So I started researching for an article about her absence, basically, and why that was wrong and all this other stuff. It was like half written, and so went to search some stories and ended up coming across several articles that were very appalling to me, to say the least. And then obviously reviews I'd read also completely ignored her. And then there was that instance where TV Guide praised Danielle Panabaker's turn as Killer Frost and completely ignored Candace and Carlos's existence and their work, unless it was to complain about them when they have feelings. Then there was that one Vanity Fair article that had the audacity to call both Candace and Danielle the leading lady, which is not true. Just the media in general sucking up to Danielle but ignoring Candace, especially like the first couple of seasons. Then there was like the instance where TV Guide called James from Supergirl a sexual predator just because he liked Kara. And just, I think, the media's willful ignorance and hand in promoting certain characters over others, and how the characters of color's existence is barely acknowledged, really got to me. And what really pisses me off is like the whiny entitled male critics who troll fans and then play victim at the end of the day, calling them bullies or whatever. And then there are also the critics who jumped on board criticizing women of color characters for the tiniest things. Like, they couldn't even breathe before, like, some reviewer would be like, well, did she have to say this? Like, that was stupid. And that's always bugged me because I feel like it's the media's responsibility, in a way, to incite change and help to put focus on these things. But since the entertainment media is still largely white and mostly male, they make bigger deals out of mediocrity and have a hand in demonizing characters of color, which then fuels fans who hate them even more. I feel like they don't have any sense of responsibility when it comes to what kind of content they put out, and that really opened my eyes to
the issues. Sometimes not even just the white media, because there are, like, viewers that were shitting on Iris until she became the cool thing, and now all of a sudden they're like, oh, we always loved Iris from the beginning, and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, you really didn't. Like, you did nothing to support her when she needed the support the most. And coming from, like, you know, a black review site, that's also kind of like, you know, you're perpetuating the mistreatment of a character of color because the white media isn't paying attention to her. You don't pay attention to her either until she becomes so popular on her own that you're like, oh, we were there from the beginning, you know, bandwagon fan. Yeah.
And what's really annoying about that specifically is that they didn't support her, and then they're all over Tessa Thompson for Valkyrie and Thor. It makes you just wonder that they don't acknowledge the fact that she was the first to kind of, like, open that door for more diversity, specifically, like, more black women in comic genre. And that is really annoying because they're like, they trip over themselves for other, you know, black women in like Marvel, but they won't support
that aren't her. Love interests.
Right.
Well, they aren't, that aren't love interests, and also that they wouldn't necessarily be reacting this way if it hadn't been for what already came before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
First off, we might not even have Tessa Thompson or Zendaya playing these roles in Marvel movies, if not for Iris's, mm-hmm. for Candace's casting as Iris, but they also wouldn't be as accepted now. True. If they were the ones that they had to be first, basically, is what I mean. I agree with everything that you guys said in terms of the struggle for Iris specifically and for The Flash. For the other shows, though, there's plenty of struggle moments. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, not so much for Legends. Legends, you've done the best job so far, except that you are shitty at Jax. You were terrible to Jax the whole time. You suck for that. But yay for Hermione. And even in the first season, they treated Kendra like she was the shit, even though she was not the shit. So you even went above and beyond. You treated Kendra like a mediocre white character. Congratulations. Moving on. Arrow has such an issue. Like, there aren't even enough characters of color on Arrow to make a statement about how they're treated. We already know that Diggle, you know, is just basically the Elicity mascot and hasn't really had a life of his own. Like, he had that one storyline with his brother, pretty much, and that's the only thing that's happened to him in 6 years. Except for the one time that he tried to date his brother's ex-wife, which is awkward because then his brother ended up being alive. So, you know, that's all awkward, but it doesn't matter. He doesn't even visit his nephew anymore. Who cares? So moving on to the other stuff. There's so many opportunities that they've had to be diverse and that they just chose to whitewash. Like, for example, when Sin shows up, Sin Lance is Asian, and Diana adopts her when she's in a village in China, but no, now she's like random white girl who's friends with Sarah, who later became White Canary, who was another Asian character. More whitewashing, so fun. Even Roy Harper, who isn't Native American himself, but his backstory is like, you know, the slightly like awkwardly racist, like, oh, he's not Native American, but he's like a Native American because he was mentored and raised in a Native American reservation, and so he has this like random Native American mentor in the background, and he acts like a Native American but isn't one, so you get the best of both worlds. And they could have made Roy Harper Native American and incorporated an actual backstory of that kind, but no, instead he was Colton Haynes, which is fine. I'm excited you're coming back, Colton Haynes, but still, more whitewashing or just like taking the whitest route possible.
Fake Artemis is not Artemis at all, and I
oh yes,
yep. And let us not forget the possible breaking point for Arrow was when they cast the whitest girl ever, whose name I cannot remember, to be Sandra Hawk. She was originally gonna be Sandra. Her name fucking said Sandra. I know it was Sandra, and she was super white, even though she is Blasian in the comics. So, and then because of that, because they were like, oh, that was too bad, they then robbed Oliver of his legacy and gave him a child named William instead, so they would not give him Connor Hawk. And now John Diggle Jr. is like, I've taken on the name Connor Hawk because I know a black person played him in the comics. So that's where we are with that. And then we have Supergirl.
Ooh, yes.
So Supergirl, when Supergirl was announced and when it was clear that James Olsen was going to be the love interest, I was super excited because I was riding that high from The Flash, and I was like, Barry and Iris is going so well, like West Allen kicks ass, Iris is treated like a leading lady, so this is going to be exactly the same but gender bent on Supergirl, and I cannot fucking wait. And then, of course, oops, that was wrong from the start. Though, like, from the start, I remember at Comic-Con, I was there, and I will not name the name of the moderator, but if you know who moderated it, then you know who it was. Asked Jeremy Jordan what it was like playing Supergirl's love interest. And this is after having seen the pilot episode. Like, he had obviously seen it, but he still asked Jeremy Jordan. Like, first off, he skipped McCott. He didn't ask McCott a question. And then he asked Jeremy Jordan, was like, things of girls love interest. And bless his heart, Jeremy redirected that question back to McCott. But like, from that start, we know that that it was not going to be an easy road for Kara and James. And unfortunately, like, it is true that neither Melissa nor McCod could match Grant and Candace's talent or chemistry. So people had a quote-unquote legitimate excuse not to like it, which is like, oh, well, they don't have chemistry. It's like, they have as much chemistry as any two white people would. But because they're not two white people, it's very easy not to like them. And James was treated, like May said, a sexual predator just for liking Kara. Like, he had a previous relationship that he decided to give another try to. It's not like he was going after Kara while he decided to give Lucy another try, but whatever, he was awful. Unlike Mon-El, of course, who is a sweet being who just happens to be married while also still presumably in love with Kara. But whatever, that's fine.
Kind of like reminds me, like a little bit, if I can go off on a little bit of a tangent, because in the Star Wars fandom, like Finn was also, there's a lot of like people like labeling him a predator, and why won't he leave Rey alone, and why is he still like holding her hand? She doesn't want her hand to be held, and like all of this, you know, backflipping to make him seem like a sexual predator when you've got like Kylo Ren that like legit like kidnapped her and did all this other shit, and you know, oh, he's just misunderstood. So,
yeah, you know, Kylo Ren can mind rape Rey and kill his dad, but Finn cannot try to hold her hand. That's just how it works.
But also, like, my little tangent about Star Wars is like the fact that people will defend Kylo to the end of the Star Wars universe. But for Poe, they'll only ever mention him unless they're saying, like, oh my god, you know, he's so attractive. And then Finn never gets mentioned. He's, like, practically non-existent to a lot of people, you know? And so it's like they'll jump through hurdles to give you reasons as to why Kylo is the way he is, but they won't do the same for all the other characters of color.
And then they get help because the film, like The Last Jedi, did that for them, trying to paint Kylo as like a victim. And I talked to you guys about this beforehand, but I've kind of like, I feel like it's kind of like what I call like the consolation prize. So like the ultimate narrative is for Rey and Finn to be the OTP at like the end. But since fandom can't, you know, deal with that, they need like a consolation prize. And so then you get The Last Jedi, which is like Kylo's semi-redemption story, where they tried, like, Rian Johnson tried to make you feel something other than, you know, he's not 100% bad guy. It's like that, you know, Get Out loophole. Like, people were trying to get Allison Williams to say that Rose was actually, like, another victim. Like, the director of the movie actually tried to do that literally within the narrative because, you know, he knows it's not going to be the end pairing of Kylo and Rey. But the consolation prize is that, you know, you're going to get this whole movie of Luke and Rey trying to save Kylo Ren's soul. So no matter what happens in the third movie, fandom can still spin off on their whole Kylo Ren is secretly an angel that needs to be redeemed, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, on The Flash, you've got the consolation prize would be Caitlin gets so much emotional support from the narrative. Most recently in episode 9, when she's feeling a little bit bad because people want to hang out with Killer Frost more than her, and she's got, like, there's three different people within the same episode giving her the same pep talk. You've got Harry giving her a pep talk that, you know, her friends like her, and she's special, Snowflake. No, it's actually four people, because there's Harry, there is Dominic, who's like, oh, I really want Caitlin Snow more than Caitlin Frost. I want her with me right now, Caitlin Snow. You've got Annie Nett, who's like, Caitlin Snow, you're a special snowflake because you can do this, and you're a smart doctor, and, you know, you're like me, and I believe in you. I don't need Killer Frost right now, I need you. And then at the end, coming around, you've got Hartley. Not Hartley, sorry, Hartley.
Poor Hartley.
Who's like, you know, I was wrong, you are a special snowflake, you mean something to me, blah, 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 blah. So you've got four people within the same episode coddling Caitlin and her emotional story. Even, like, all of season three, building up her season three arc with Killer Frost. But then you've got all of 2A. Like, Iris lost her mother before the show started, thought she lost her mother, finds out her mother is alive, and you don't see her process it at all, or barely process it. She's like crying alone in a corner, and no one really talks to her about it. She's kind of like supposed to be strong and deal with it on her own. Like, even if going back to episode 9, in that same episode, like, you can tell, like, how Harry treated Iris in relation to, you've got to choose, you've got to be the leader, and how Harry coddled Caitlin. It's clear difference between how the show treats two ladies. Like, Harry,
even the difference in how Ammunit, who is a villain, talked to Caitlin when she's in her pep talk, versus how Harry, a hero, talks to Iris.
Yeah. So, and Harry's talked to Iris, babe, like, you're what's wrong, like, suck it up, buttercup, kind of thing. Whereas it's very much kid gloves with Caitlin. So I feel like the consolation prize for fandom that is upset that Barry won't get Caitlin is that everybody else in the narrative supports Caitlin. Everybody else is, like, to cater to Caitlin's, like, emotional needs. She's getting support from everybody but Barry. Even though Barry's the one they want, she's getting support from everybody else. Whereas Iris has Barry, she gets Barry support, and Barry's like the most important person to get support from. But outside of that, it's very rare that you see her get treated with the same kind of kid gloves. So that emotional coddling is Caitlin's fandom, her fandom's consolation prize to her not ending up with Barry.
But they don't want that consolation prize because they're not really fans, but that's an entirely different story.
Final thoughts about the DC TV fandom?
I mean, going back to even, the media thing, like you were talking about how people coddle Caitlyn on the show, I feel like the media, after she became Killer Frost, they would just jump through hoops to not make her seem like the selfish person that she entirely was during season 3. And, what she did, it's, all forgivable. But then, there was someone on Twitter who shall remain nameless who was like, oh, I would totally put Barry in my top villains. Barry Allen is not a villain, guys. Come on, seriously. But, they'll forgive Caitlyn for all the shit that she did.
I'm not saying that it's a correlation. Or maybe it is correlation, but I'm not saying it's causation, even though it clearly is. But the more that Barry prioritizes Iris and the West family, the more likely people are to turn on him in fandom. So it's if Barry was using time travel, and he didn't even really use time travel poorly to save Iris. He didn't cause anything mm-hmm. when he was saving Iris. But people still act as if he was. But if he was doing all the same things to keep Caitlin from being Killer Frost, or to, fucking, I don't know, save Jesse for the 30th time for Harry's sake, people would not have treated him the way that they did for loving Iris too much, which is really, that's why he's a villain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think it definitely is a correlation. We've seen, you mentioned in a few podcasts ago how Barry's fans will love him, but they won't internalize his point of view. And it's Barry is now, he's not even a white male lead. He's white adjacent. They don't even give him the benefit of the doubt. They would Oliver for whatever he does, because Oliver loves Felicity, who is white.
I will say one other thing that I meant to mention earlier and didn't, but he's the Cisco adjacent person in the show would be Joe. The token POC best friend for fandom is I'm not racist because I like Joe. I hate Iris, but I like Joe. Joe's cool until Joe does something.
Until Joe releases Abracadabra, which yeah. somehow tangentially leads to Caitlin becoming Killer Frost.
Right, and then he's the worst person in the world. Or Wally's cool. I like Wally until Wally takes up more time or has a one featured episode where he's faster than Barry, and all of a sudden, Wally's so annoying, and they're good as long as they stay in that little box of being acceptable to Barry or to Caitlin, being friendly to one of those two and ignoring Iris. Joe's fine. Joe wants to keep Iris out of the secret. He's my best friend. But then all of a sudden, Joe wants to follow Iris as a leader, and suddenly Joe is just I don't want to see him anymore kind of thing.
Or how last season the Supergirl fan was all oh yes, poor James, because, yeah. Kara dumped his ass at the end of the first episode in the second season, which will forever annoy me. But everyone was oh, poor James, he's being left out and he's Guardian, but what's happening with him? And they did, they had the fake concern. And then now that he is getting into a relationship with Lena, he's primary enemy number one again.
James was less of an evil than Mon-El. James was a lesser evil for people that like Kara and either Kat or Kara and now Lena. He was, comparing him to Mon-El, they wanted James back. Thank God that I didn't really get into the Supergirl fandom that much, and I have issues, McCott issues, but, James kind of meant to me, but I'm thank God I'm not a James fan, because, seeing him, disappear for literally episodes, at least Candace got a check for every episode. She might have been in, she only had one line in the crossover, but she was there. She got a check for it. James, McCott is missing for, episodes at a time. And, that was just fine for a lot of people. But then everyone's all poor James, and why doesn't James have the story? Until he gets in the way of Lena and Kara getting together. And then suddenly James is once again, a sexual predator. Why won't he leave Lena alone? Da-da-da-da-da.
Exactly. All the same arguments they used against Kara and James in season 1 were recycled for James and Lena in season 3, even though they backtracked on them in season 2. And that's why you know that these are not real arguments. People don't really feel this way about the characters. They just use those arguments to distance themselves from the real reason that they have a problem with these characters. Mm-hmm. and with these relationships.
So moving on to our next topic, which is also like a pretty complicated topic for me. Like the colorism problem is what I'm going to call it. Basically, well, let's see. So first up on like the colorism problem, we'll talk the big one, representation of black women in Hollywood. And how I mentioned earlier that it's usually one, there can only be one because it's Highlander. So there's only like one up there. But the one is usually lighter than a paper bag. So like the paper bag test, if you didn't know, historically in the United States, I'm pretty sure other places as well. But for black actresses, singers, anything doing in the entertainment industry, you were more likely to become successful or be a commercial success if your skin tone was lighter than paper bag. So like if you wanted to go into like a bar, get like a singing gig or get into a movie, you know, they might hold up a paper bag to your face. And if your skin tone was darker than that paper bag, then you weren't getting the job. And that still kind of bleeds into Hollywood today. Like when you have the same three or four actresses, like it's very hard for black women to get into the industry young, unknown now. But the three or four that do are the same three or four that get every single like black female role ever, and they're always fan cast. The same light-skinned women are the same ones that are always fan cast, same ones that are like everywhere. And so recently, one of the examples, Alexis Shipp plays Storm in the X-Men series, currently X-Men series, had like this massive Twitter meltdown. And then also we can talk about her first, we can talk about them both at the same time, but also bringing it close to the DC TV fandom, 70% white Sierra Renee was casted as Kendra Saunders on Legends of Tomorrow. So it's kind of wondering, because I know you ladies saw kind of like both of those instances when they went down on Twitter, what your feelings were about those situations and the problem of colorism within the black actress industry in general. We'll start there.
Well, the Alexander Shipp thing happened super recently, and I remember I saw it because Nina Paredes was like getting involved in it and trying to educate Miss Shipp, and that did not go so well. So I understand that when you're online and people attack you directly, like it's easy to get defensive, just like it's easy to be offensive when you are vaguely anonymous and are not having to argue with someone face to face. So yeah, I don't like that method. Like, I don't like it when people attack actors. But I also think that in this instance, like, you have to be able to look past method and listen to the message. You know, and if you don't, like, if Alexandra Shipp isn't aware of colorism, which she obviously is because she tried to act like there was reverse colorism, saying that, you know, she's been discriminated against for being too light-skinned. But if you aren't aware of it, then you take that time to become aware of it, to see where people are coming from, right? Because if this many people are coming at you for some reason, then either they're Trump supporters or they're probably not wrong. So, and then one step further than that is that once you're aware of it, if you see like, oh, you know what, a lot of light-skinned actresses are being put up for things, and I know, because I have eyeballs and I've looked at a comic panel before, that Storm is much darker skinned than me. When I get the role of Storm, or when someone calls me up and is like, oh, hey, I saw you in this movie, and I was like, you're just light enough, I want to cast you, you could say, you know what, I don't feel comfortable taking that role. Like, not a black woman, but Ed Skrein did when he found out that his role was actually Asian. And he was like, you know what, I don't want this role. Give it to someone who's Asian. Like, that's all you have to do to be an advocate and to actually open doors for darker skinned women, you know, and or for whatever it is that you are in this instance. Just say no to roles that you know would benefit someone else who isn't getting as much representation. When you have the power, make roles for people who need more representation. And obviously, that is not something that actresses like Alexandra Shipp want to do because they're focused on the me of it, right? They're focused on the offense or on their own personal, whatever, things that have been said about them. If someone comes at you, you just have to think of what's behind that. Like, why did they say that? Instead of being the person who just focuses on the one that's calling you racist or the one that's saying that you're not black or whatever it is, and using that as an opportunity to cry on Twitter.
I think what's interesting with her is that she started calling people... What was it that she was, like, saying that black people were being racist against her?
Yeah. Like, she and her brother, I think, were trying to say that, oh, Storm was biracial in the comics. Like, no, she wasn't. Like, she had an African mother and a Black American father.
Right. And, like, while I agree with Tati, I don't think the method is always good when people are, like, mention actors when they're complaining about something. I thought the way that she responded was a little bit distasteful, because she was basically saying that she is in it for herself and that she didn't, you can tell she didn't understand the argument, even when people like Nina Perez, who was, like, being nicer about it, you know, and she was just, like, being patient for as long as she could to discuss with her, like, why this is a problem. Because in the comic, Storm was meant to be, she is meant to be a darker skinned woman. And then they have not cast any dark skinned woman at all. Like, we had Halle Berry before, who was very, who's lighter skinned, and now Alexander Shipp. So she took it, like, as a personal attack and then started calling people bullies and turning it around on them. But she should be aware of the issue. And I think that hopefully she'll take this moment to, like, educate herself. Hollywood's been awful about casting darker skinned women. They're either, like, the super aggressive ones in the movie or TV show, or they're just, like, they have very, very minor roles. They're never in, like, primary roles, which I think that hopefully Black Panther will change in the comics world. Regarding Sierra Renee, I'm just going to jump in and say I actually was not around for that little thing on Twitter. I just heard about it. Yes. That she was, like, 70% white or something like that. And she kept going back and forth. But all I can say is that when I did find out that she tried out for Iris, I was really irritated, because I am not a fan of her acting. And I think she would have made a terrible Iris. And I'm so glad that didn't happen.
Yeah, when you're seeing the whole trend in Hollywood about casting darker-skinned women in certain roles, that kind of reminded me of Straight Outta Compton, when the casting list for that came out, when they were looking for women, they had, like, the A girl, I think it was, like, A through D girls, and what they were looking for. And the farther down they got from the A girls, the darker skin the women were that they wanted to cast.
Yeah.
A girls were, like, the premium girls, and they were, like, the light skin, racially ambiguous, you have to be Black, top of the line girls. And then you get down to the D girls were, like, dark skin, kind of chubby. It was very, very colorist when that came out, and that was kind of, like, disheartening. But I think, like, the whole situation with Shipp having her meltdown on Twitter is exactly why, like, it makes my eyes twitch when people insist that Jessica Parker Kennedy is playing Jenny instead of Dawn. And I even had, like, someone send an ask-in on Tumblr. I don't know if they're really trying to, like, understand, or if they're, you know, trolling or whatever. But they're like, well, how is that any different from, like, white fanboys wanting Iris to be white and comic compliant or whatever? And I'm like, well, you know, colorism and racism are two completely different things. And colorism is, you know, more a byproduct of racism, because it's the approximation to whiteness that seems to denote desirability in Hollywood and just, like, society in general. And it's very, like, it's like telling people that are not white, like non-white people, that only one skin tone is, you know, the more acceptable skin tone. That's not just for within the Black community, within other communities as well, which we'll get to in a minute. But, like, representation is more than just hiring the same 3 and 4 light skin actresses to be in all of the movies, especially when you get people like Shipp that are not even, you know, they're, like you said, they're just in it for themselves. So why would I hype you up and stand your career on Twitter? You don't even represent people that look like me. You don't want to be an ally for women that look like me in the industry. Why would I support you, kind of thing? And so for her, I wish, like, she would get that. It's like Hollywood kind of, like, tries to find that loophole, like, oh, we're diverse because she's not 100% white, but she doesn't look like the Storm in the comics either. But if I hire the same 3 or 4 women to be, like, love interests, are people that are not just stereotypes, and they're all the same skin tone, it's only telling the people watching that if you're not this color or lighter than this paper bag, then you're not someone to be, like, desired. Even if, like, even changing, more so changing from the book to the screen. Like, she was okay in book form when you couldn't see her and you could imagine, like, what she could possibly look like. But when she's on screen, you know, she could be your favorite character, like white fandom's favorite character in the book. But if she's on screen, no one's gonna like her unless she is a certain color. And that's
that actually reminds me of Hunger Games, when people were furious that Rue was Black on screen, even though she was Black in the book.
Right.
Yeah.
But they just imagined her white. Or even Shipp and her brother themselves. The reason why they thought that Storm was biracial is because the Wikipedia of the page just says her father was American and doesn't say he was a Black American. So they assume or they envision that it's a white American.
And with going back to Jenny versus Dawn debate, like, Jenny is biracial in the comics, but she's also, like, dark-skinned. And so wanting her to be dark-skinned when you have very little representation of dark-skinned Black female superheroes in comics, you want, like, that to be kept on screen. And Dawn is white in the comics because her mother is white in the comics. Candace Patton is Black. Cyrus is Black. So Dawn is now biracial on the show. So, like, for me, you know, well, Jenny was in the Legion of Superheroes and she debuted on that, and, you know, Jenny's biracial, and, well, so is Dawn, you know, now she is. So why, like, do all of this stretching and leaping to hop over a now canon biracial Dawn just to make her Jenny when she doesn't have to be Jenny? And Jenny could still be dark-skinned and exist on the show at some point in the season, and Dawn can be lighter-skinned Jessica Parker Kennedy. And then, like, you know, going back against the actresses that victimize themselves and say, "What was me?" or only in it for themselves, like Shipp, you're not really an ally if you're only in it for yourself. Like, you can't expect me to fight for you because of the 1% rule. You're, like, you've got, like, a drop of Black in you, so therefore, you know, it's fine for you to take all these roles from, like, other actresses in the industry, and if I don't support you, then I'm being mean or I'm being, like, reverse colorist or, you know, racist or whatever. And that also goes, like, 70% white Sierra Renee. Like, when Sierra Renee was cast as Kendra Saunders, who was supposed to be a Latina anyway, and it didn't have to be white Latina, it could have been a Black Latina, which, you know, we'll get into that as well, why they don't exist in media. But she's not, like, none of her ancestry is, like, she's, like, 0% Latina, so she's, like, failing on that point. When fans went up and were on Twitter asking her, you know, I'm not sure, like, what is your ethnicity? They want to know that this person that has been selected to represent me in media is actually who they say they are. And so she would try and, you know, be one way, I'm white today or I'm Black tomorrow. And, you know, she's trying to frame it as, like, some kind of social experiment that people only accept her when she says that she's Black versus when she says that she's white or Indian or whatever her other racial background is. I'm like, no one asked you to separate yourself into, like, separate categories for different people. Just say that you're mixed and that you accept all of your ancestry and go. You know, no one was asking you to do that. You brought that on yourself. And so, like, again, like, why would I support someone who only wants to claim the 70% white side of them today? Why would I want to support that? And I was going to support Legends of Tomorrow and her in that role, but then that happened. I was just like, well, no. she basically, like, tore down her own fandom before her show even started.
Yeah, it was almost a relief that Kendra, you know, was the character that she was, and that I was not gonna miss Ciara's acting when she left. So I didn't have to worry about, like, you know, not supporting someone who's actually good because of something that they said. But the fact that she, like you had mentioned before, May, that she auditioned for Iris, yeah, knowing that she considers herself 70% white, you know, like, when Iris is Black, and then would she have said something like that if she was playing Iris? First off, we wouldn't be watching. I know we wouldn't be watching The Flash if she was Iris. But, you know, could you imagine if she had said something like that while playing Iris West?
Like, then that.
Take away, like, you don't even have the first Black Iris West now.
No, you have the first 70% white Iris West. And, like, I don't think, you know, I get that people of mixed race heritage have, like, a different struggle with coming to terms with their background and trying to find a place to fit in. But it's also kind of, you know, it's a Hollywood problem, and that those mixed race, racially ambiguous people are the people that Hollywood prefers. But it's also frustrating when someone doesn't get or doesn't want to understand why that could be hurtful to a lot of other people. Like, if Sierra Renee was playing Iris West and she had that same Twitter discussion about her being, like, 70% white, like, that would be, like, just super hurtful for me, you know? And especially not even just on screen, but behind the screen. You say that she's a Black character, but she's played by someone that is not Black. And then the writers writing her aren't Black either. So, like, how am I supposed to, like, you know, relate to someone that says it's not that it's me, but it's not, kind of thing. So kind of, like, flowing off from that into, like, a different colorism problem, Amy Jackson, who plays Saturn Girl on Supergirl, and the whiteness in Bollywood.
Yeah. Well, first, Supergirl is the mistress of casting these super problematic actresses in terms of colorism, but Amy Jackson, also, like, the first picture that people were using of her, it was, like, one of those photos of her, like, Bollywood photos that were, like, meant to make her look kind of brown, and all the headlines were, like, cast Bollywood actresses as Saturn Girl, and so it's, like, for a second, everyone's excited, but I was, like, looking, I was, like, there's something wrong with this photo, and then, of course, you know, you look her up, and you're, like, oh, wait a second, that's what's wrong, but I've always known that India, and then, of course, all of Asia, South Asia, East Asia, you know, the world, the whole world, has a problem with colorism. But, like, specifically, in these countries, they actually use, like, skin brightening cream to make your skin lighter. And so it was literally just, like, taking, like, an extra step. Like, some fucking Bollywood director thought, like, oh, instead of making my actress peddle the skin brightening cream and sell it to the masses, I will just cast a literally white woman so that my audiences can see what they should be aiming for. And now that's... she's being brought over to the United States to, I guess, finally truly be herself. But based on her performance thus far, it's only been 2 episodes, but I'm like, of all, like, I wasn't even asking for you to cast a woman of color for Saturn Girl, but, like, of all the fucking white girls in the United States and Isle of Man or whatever the fuck, you know, like, if you wanted an accent for her, of all the white girls, you chose, like, the one that thinks that she's brown. But it just goes to show, like, it's actually, like, sickening to think that, like, people do this to themselves, like, because they want to be closer to whiteness. But it is just a reflection of how much colonialism affected all of us and still does, right? Like, imperialism, colonialism, whatever. Like, because the only reason that everyone wants to be white is because white people are the ones that happen to go out and enslave everyone. Or, you know, take possession of their land or whatever the fuck. Appropriate cultures, blah, blah, blah. So,
right, I mean, they basically set the standard for, like, what beauty should look like. And the lighter you are, the more beautiful you seem to people. And in terms of this, it's like when I heard that she pretends to be a South Asian actress in Bollywood films, I used to watch a lot of Bollywood films and I was appalled, but I wasn't surprised. Part of colorism has somewhat become this weird thing where white people can pretend to be other ethnicities and races, like Amy Jackson and Floriana Lima on Supergirl, but Hollywood can't be bothered to hire people who actually belong to a certain ethnicity or race. And then they get defensive about it. And then society has long perpetuated this myth that, you know, the lighter you are, the more attractive you are, and that we've carried that unconsciously. And even within, like, the Bollywood community, the darker the actresses are, the more ugly, quote-unquote, they are considered. I feel like Supergirl hired her to play Imra so that she could look more quote-unquote exotic, which is in and of itself awful.
Yeah, and like we said, like, it's not just Bollywood, it's, like, right, everywhere too. But that reminds me, I recently saw a Saudi Arabian romantic comedy and I was, like, really enjoying it. I thought it was super cute. And then, like, the lead guy, he's, like, falls in love with the lead girl, and she's Arab, but she's, like, blonde. I don't know if it's dyed or if she just is blonde, and she has, like, you know, lighter skin, and I don't know, whatever. She's probably wearing colored contacts. Anyway, so then he's like, oh my God, like, where is she from? Like, is she actually from Saudi Arabia? Because, like, she's so beautiful. And then, like, later he's like, I just hope that God grants me a woman as white as her. Like, he literally said that. Like, I would love to be with a woman as white as her. And I was like, is this cute? Yeah. Like, you just said that with, like, no fucking irony whatsoever.
I don't think it's not even, it's more of a, it's also, like, a sexist problem, because it's only, like, women that this colorism standard applies to. There are a lot of, like, leading men in the U.S., black men that are darker skinned, and they're usually darker skinned, like Denzel Washington, Idris Elba, all of these, like, big name, Chadwick Boseman, all dark skinned men. All Will Smith is more brown, he's on the lighter end, but, you know, all of these men can make it even if they're dark skinned. But you've got, like, Viola Davis and Octavia Spencer and Angela Bassett that had to, like, put in 20 plus years of work before they were considered to be at the top of their, like, acting tier, even though they've been there, like, having really good under the radar careers for a long time, but they didn't really have a big break until 20 plus years down in their acting career. And, like, going back to the whole Amy Jackson and Bollywood thing, like, I know whitewashing is a thing that we struggle with in the U.S. in regards to, like, taking movies from other cultures and rebooting them with all white people. Like, recently, the Death Note movie, which is based on anime in Japan, anime and manga in Japan, that they rebooted for Netflix with casted, like, mostly white people. Also, Ghost in the Shell, there's huge uproar with Scarlett Johansson being cast as a Japanese woman, even though she wasn't technically a Japanese woman, so it's kind of like a loophole there. And I asked some people about it, some of my coworkers about it, because we have like a kind of an English world thing after work, like once a month, where we talk about discussions so they can kind of like brush up on their English skills and, you know, critical thinking and all this kind of stuff. And I was asking them, I was like, does this bother you that a movie about Japanese anime and a culture being made in the U.S. had Scarlett Johansson as the lead instead of a Japanese actor? And they, it didn't really bother them that much that she was, because they was like, well, you know, it needs to be marketed towards the American audience, blah, blah, blah. Some of them are like, but, you know, it wasn't that big of a deal. But then they also have their own industry and their own movies that are clearly, like, all Japanese. So I was thinking, like, maybe at least within their own sphere, it would be more of, like, a problem. And, like, Bollywood is, like, really big deal, you know, compared to, like, Hollywood and Bollywood. They're pretty much up there at the same level with, like, the seriousness with which they make and create movies. And so I think it was even more shocking to me that Amy Jackson, who is, like, a white British woman with no Indian ancestry, doesn't know the language, was somehow able to get cast and succeed playing an Indian woman in Bollywood. Like, if it was, like, an American movie or whatever, and she was playing semi-Indian, that would just be like, oh, well, that's the U.S. That's the, you know, whitewashing. It's just another day in Hollywood. But the fact that she was able to do it within the sphere of Bollywood was, like, really shocking to me. But I guess I know colorism is a super huge problem in India, as it is in a lot of non-white spaces in the world. But I guess I didn't realize it went to the extent of a white woman taking a role that was meant for any woman in a movie that was meant for an Indian audience. Like, that was almost like another level of, like, fucked upness for me. She can't sing, I don't think. She doesn't know the language because they have to dub her in a lot of the movies. And then they actually, she's even, like, too white for Bollywood because they usually darken her skin somewhat to make her look more Indian.
So right, kind so of, what's like, the point?
Right, they're jumping through all these hoops for no reason.
Yeah, it's like, it seems like a lot of work to go through to promote the erasure and call it art. So it's like all for the sake of whiteness. And even like, for example, I just came back from the Philippines. So I spent New Year's over there. And my hotel had this soap. It's kind of like the liquid soap. And it was just not great. So I'm like, you know, I'm going to go out and I'm going to find like a bar soap. And so I went to the store. And almost all of the soaps in the store had some kind of like whitening agent to them. Going back to Supergirl, we'll get into Floriana Lima now, the Italian Latina.
That is its own trope, really, the Italian Latina or Latino. Like, so many Italian actors playing Latin American characters because obviously it's the same thing. And also because you don't want to cast an actual Latino, like, lest you run into one that isn't also white and then have to actually cast a brown person, God forbid. But with Floriana, again, that was another issue where it's like they made a big deal about the fact that they were going to make Maggie Latina, right? They were also like, oh, look at that, diverse. And everyone's really excited. Floriana Lima got cast. You know, her name kind of sounds like Spanish. You know, I'm right here in Lima right now. So I thought, oh, maybe that is actually correct. But my friend Ronaldo did tell me, he was like, I don't think she's Latina. And I was like, why? He's like, because of her eyebrows. I was like, okay, whatever. And then, of course, lo and behold, she is not Latina. So watch out for the eyebrows in the future. And she did another sort of thing, like Ciara, where she was like, oh, you know, like, I'm not really going to, like, explain what my ethnicity is. And, like, oh, I'm just, like, all the colors of the world. I'm a mutt. I think she literally said, I'm a mutt, smiley face. And people had, like, tracked down some old fucking newspaper to see that she was actually Italian. And then she's like, oh, yeah, we've got a lot of Italian in our family. Oops. So this is a thing that I don't think, and I know that Italian immigrants used to be discriminated against, right? Like, even fucking, you know, Irish people used to be discriminated against and still are in the UK, but in the US they used to be. So it's like things evolve, right? So now that Italians are more palatable, like, they're cool now, thanks Sopranos. So the Italians can play Latinos, but Latinos can't because they're still illegal immigrants. like, they are the only immigrants in our eyes right now. In our eyes, I mean, you know, not literally ours, white people's eyes. So, moving on. I don't know, I guess it's just like, it's like, and there's so many levels to it too, because it's like, when you cast an actress who is supposed to be Latina, and that's part of her character, like, you actually incorporated Maggie speaking Spanish and, like, her and her dad talking about the wall that's being built, and you don't cast a Latina, you don't cast a brown person, which is really where the, like, that's where the discrimination would come in, because, like, you could be Latina and then you also be white and just shut your mouth and no one would ever know, and then they would treat you just the same, right? But, and then to have her speak Spanish, and you clearly hear that she cannot speak Spanish, you know? So it's like on every level it's failed. Like, and you could hire, and her other white dad, you know, sitting there also talking in broken Spanish about how they're going to be kicked out of the country by an actual Mexican. For the worst.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard the argument, well, what does it matter who's playing the role so long as the actor looks the part? Like, and this probably applies for every single race and ethnicity who's had someone else who is not their race or ethnicity play someone who is. And I feel like that's Floriana Lima as Maggie in a nutshell. It's especially rude and deceptive to claim you're looking for someone to play Latina actress or Latina character and then cast someone who isn't. I think Hollywood still has a long way to go because it's like they're stuck in an age where they think people won't speak out or they can get away with tanning someone to look a part that never should have been theirs to begin with. And for, like, what upsets me is for every Floriana Lima, there is a Latina actress who lost a part to someone who isn't even that ethnicity. And that's what pisses me off. It's like there's the argument that they cast for talent or whatever, but there's plenty of people, minorities, who are looking for roles, but Hollywood won't give it to them. And what does that even say about the casting directors and all the creatives involved in Supergirl, you know? A show that's supposedly feminist, diverse, and progressive. And even Floriana Lima herself, who talked around the subject, you know? Then to give her the character background story, like you were saying, Tati, that involved some stereotypes and felt inauthentic because she wasn't able to really speak Spanish, and that wasn't really her background. It just added salt to the wound, you know?
Yeah. Like what you're saying, like, why does it matter the role as long as the actor, like, looks like the part? Who decides that she looks like the part? Latina does not have one face or one, like, shade. Same, like, black doesn't have one face or one shade. So, like, who's to say that she actually does look the part? Because she doesn't. Like, there's a ton of other actual Latina people that could be ton of different shades that could fit the part because they are actually Latina or Latino,
yeah.
Male. And again, it's just like the bait and switch promise of diversity is what continues to be, like, frustrating. And, like, I feel like the Italian Latina problem is similar to the paper bag problem for black women, because the better the Latina role in the show, the more lighter skin or more Italian the actress playing her tends to be. I remember seeing, like, a fan cast of Diane Guerrero in, like, a leather jacket and, like, oh, that she could have been Maggie. And I was like, well, you know, like, we could have had it all. And, like, and she used to be on Jane the Virgin, and we know how CW likes to recycle their actors. It's not like Orange and the Black was, like, using Maritza super heavily. So, I mean, she could have had it all. And she was, like, an actual Latina. But then you get Floriana Lima, who is 0% Latina. You know, darker skin Latinas often get cast, like Tatiana says, like maids or low income roles. And, you know, what is an Afro Latina? Because they don't exist ever at all. I think I saw it recently on Twitter, Love and Hip Hop Miami or whatever. And I can't
think. Amara La Negra?
Amara La Negra.
Amara La Negra.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they, like, showed the clip of her, and she was arguing with her producer that she wanted to work with, why she couldn't exist as, like, an Afro-Latina. And he was, like, pretty much brick wall, tone deaf about it. But that's kind of, like, the struggle that a lot of Afro-Latinas have to go through, not considered to be actually Latina because they're black. And then I think I saw, like, another clip recently about Gina Torres, and she was being interviewed for Telemundo, and the person interviewing her was just assuming that she couldn't speak Spanish. So that, you know, that's a whole other racism and colorism and, you know, all in, like, one little tight little ball.
No, I was gonna say, we have so much of that in Latin America itself. Like, the colorism is so prominent, and I don't even know what else you'd call it, but just, like, indigenous women and Afro-Latinas are both treated terribly and are invisible in our media, even. Like, we go to the other, like, it's even worse than Bollywood. You know, like, there isn't the Telugu or the Tamil cinema where, because they literally are, like, darker skin, like, they couldn't possibly help it. They do cast their brown-skinned actresses and actors in those. but like everywhere you look, like the novelas or films in Latin America, you're going to find the whitest possible Latin Americans. You know, like the whitest people that they can find are the leads. And then every once in a while, you will have an indigenous woman playing like the like third maid that nothing actually happens to her, right? She's not the one that hooks up with the dude and whatever gets turned into a princess. And then, of course, you know, Afro-Latinas, you're only going to find them if it's a film about slavery or a fable about slavery.
And then it's like especially aggravating, like you were like when she was asked about her, Gloria was asked about her ethnicity, and she was like, well, I'm a mutt kind of thing. Like when they purposely try to muddle their ethnic background or talk in circles to avoid it in interviews, like, I'm also looking at you, Theo Rossi, because you're... Like, any Afro-Latino role that is offered, he takes it. And, like, I'm pretty, like, I would bet money that he's not Afro or Latino. Like, he's probably 100% Italian.
I was going to say, isn't he Italian?
Yeah. But it's still talking around in circles around what they actually are. And so it's like, you can't really say that you don't know what's going on when you're purposely trying to hide your ethnicity to get roles for an ethnicity that you are not. So you can't have, like, you can't play both sides of the fence on it because you're actively participating in it. You can't say it's, like, a systematic problem when you're part of the problem. You're part of the system. They get, like, these huge fandoms thinking that they're getting representation, and they're actually not. And maybe they don't get cast in traditional Italian roles, like, you know, Florina was, like, crying because, like, well, I'm considered too dark, so you can't play Italian, da-da-da-da. So that means that you can just take someone else's. See, like, I thought, like, on Supergirl that they, once people found out that she wasn't Latina, that they would just kind of back it up and make her just, like, racially ambiguous, but then they doubled down on it with the whole Mexican story, and it's just like, well, you're doing this on purpose, you know?
Yeah.
It really was, like, on purpose, because the first season, or her first season that she was on, it wasn't, like, a part of her story at all. Like, she said one line about being brown. And she, you know, could go like, well, because I used so much self-tanner, I was literally brown, and people were mean to me. And that would be the whole story. But there was nothing about her being Latina until they cast her non-Latina dad, Latino dad, and then suddenly...
They're Mexican! They're super Mexican!
Right, it's like, if the casting call is for a Latina, why are you even going to the audition?
Wasn't it like Smallville, Chloe? Was supposed to be, I never was in Smallville, Bantam, I didn't watch the show, but I heard about it.
Allison Mack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She was, like, the role was supposed to be, was it supposed to be, like, a black woman in that role?
Yep.
And then Allison Mack walked into the audition, and people were like, oh my god, you're so edgy, you came in for, like, a black woman's role, we should give you the role. So she, like, went into the, like, a white woman going into a role for, specifically calling for, a black woman in the casting, and she went in and casting thought she was so, you know, bold for coming into a role not meant for her, and they gave her the role.
And the sad thing is that if a black woman had gotten that role, Chloe Sullivan would have remained the way that she was originally envisioned, and would not have, like, taken over half the show, and Clark, or how would you say Clark?
Schlark? I don't even know.
Chloe, like, yeah, whatever, that horrible ship name.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have been, like, a looming factor to the point that people literally thought she was Lois.
Mm-hmm.
The real Lois, and fake Lois would just die off so that Chloe could give birth to the true legacy of Superman. That would never have happened if the actress who deserved the role of Chloe had done it.
Yeah, that's very true. But now she's a sex cultist, so...
I guess, finally, to kind of end our podcast on a more positive note, the last topic that I wanted to talk about was sisterhood and positivity within fandom. So, like, what are some of your more positive, you talked a lot about some of the issues that we've had and struggles, but what are some of the positive experiences that you've had being in fandoms, both DC TV and in general?
Meeting you both. And just in general, aww. I think, yes. Meeting and getting to interact with people who share the same passions about DC TV and characters I love, specifically on Twitter, and then a couple people besides you guys I've met in person, which has been great. And then just getting to be excited together and all the positives. I feel like all the positives in fandom for me outweigh the negatives, and this is going to sound really mushy, but despite all the negatives that come with loving DC TV and comics-related stuff and all the idiots we have to deal with on a daily basis, I feel like this has been the best fandom experience I've ever had, so yay.
Aww. I mean, I definitely agree with that. This has been, like, meeting, there's so many amazing women that I have met, you know, online and in person, especially you two ladies, but also, you know, like, I could shout out, like, specific ones, but I guess I won't, because then some people would feel left out that I do that. But there's so many, like, just smart women who are, like, branching out in the world of media and writing. You know, like, I've started writing, like, actually, like, scripts with someone because of this fandom. And people who are also, like, making me more aware of the world that we live in and various issues that I don't think about, like, that I wouldn't have thought of myself, you know? So as many shitty, you know, racist, sexist, everythingist, nonsense, garbage, anonymous people that there are on the internet, there's also so many, like, enlightened people who actually respect each other and are willing to, like, educate you, you know, and really help you see the bigger picture, which is wonderful. And I hope that every one of you gets to where you want to be in life so that you can start enacting change for others.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, like, for me as well, meeting both of you ladies, it's kind of crazy. You building, like, friendships. Sometimes friendships are, like, years long without actually having met the person face-to-face. But, like, your mutuals, you, like, have, like, a true, like, friendship. I met Tatiana, like, in... We met going to a Nashville Comic Con together to meet Candace, because it was my first Comic Con, and I didn't want to go alone, because I guess I had avoided them for whatever reason, and I didn't want to go alone to it, and Candace was coming to that Comic Con, and I was like, well, do you want to go? And she's like, yeah, so we went, and, like, we met in Nashville for the first time, and went to that together, and then last year, meeting May at SDCC was another one of those things, like, well, we need, like, a fourth roommate. He's like, well, I need someone to go with. He's like, yeah, come with us. So, you know, like, getting to meet people and, like, having these friendships, and it's kind of the thing, like, you know, people always want to feel part of something bigger, and so you get into these things. There's so many different aspects of fandom coming together for, like, trends, or supporting your favorite actress or actor or show, and just, like, camaraderie that you get within that. And I think also I want to shout out the ladies at DCTV, since we are, like, Ladies of Gumption podcast. I don't know how long, and, like, Shoe Authority was Katie's kind of baby brainchild, and I don't know how long that she had been thinking about doing that, and how many conversations that she and Candace may have, like, kicked around, like, yeah, we should, like, have, like, some kind of positive thing for us, because, you know, with the revelations of Angie Kreisberg and all of that, and just thinking about what kind of atmosphere that must have been like for them as women on DCTV shows, working all in Vancouver, largely by themselves for, like, long periods out of the year, coming together and actually, like, talking about it, and, like, you know what, I'm gonna start an Instagram page, you know what, we're gonna get on Twitter, we're gonna make t-shirts, we're gonna do this, and, you know, I feel like you really kind of see, like, a shift with the ladies within the shows themselves becoming more of a unit and finding safety and empowerment in that. And then for them to invite us as fans into that was something that was really, felt really special for me, because it's like the safe space that they created for themselves, and allowing us to be a part of that into their safe space and positive place, and spreading out more positivity, which is something that was really nice to see, especially being led by these women that we look up to on screen. As well. So that's like one of the great parts of being in this fandom in particular. What do you guys have any hopes or see any bright lights or silver linings for trends towards inclusivity in TV for the near future or now?
Well, I mean, Hollywood still has a long way to go in getting past their inherent racism, biases, and stereotypes, but I like to think it's improving. I mean, for every step forward, we take like 10 steps back, right? But I'm also really happy that many people, whether it's like creative people or fans or whoever, are becoming more vocal and not accepting these dumbass excuses that creatives and studio producers like to use over and over regarding there not being any talent, or we did this for this dumb reason, you know? So I feel like networks like ABC are further along. I know that they're developing a Middle Eastern superhero TV show, so that's right up my alley, which is amazing. Aww. And will wash away the bad taste that tyrant left in my mouth. While like other networks like CBS are still behind in any kind of diverse casting. But I hope that the inclusivity doesn't mean that they're going to recycle the same people, because like like just mentioned before about using the same actors for fan casts and whatever. But as much as I love, for example, Ava DuVernay, who's a very high profile now, and I'm so happy for her, but realistically, she can't direct everything, right? So there needs to be more opportunities for people of color, both behind and in front of the camera. And I hope we continue to see that, and that when all of these changes are occurring, that they'll stick, and that we won't go back into, you know, the Jurassic period.
Shonda Rhimes is not the only
right
black in the world.
Oh my god. I am really grateful to the creators of color who have pushed for their shows or their films to the point that, you know, now we're actually starting to see them, like, and to whatever network or production company, no matter how small that they are, who is willing to take a so-called chance on casting people of color and hiring people of color to actually write for these stories. Because a lot of times people think that just having diversity on screen is enough, and now you've done your job, but we need to have people of color behind the scenes in every aspect so that a fuller picture of those stories can be told. So we're definitely not anywhere near there yet, but we are starting to get a few more stories that do feel like authentically part of whichever culture or whichever ethnicity that they are meant to represent. And hopefully that's just going to improve over the next decade or so, you know?
Yeah.
Until we make our shows.
I feel like for me as a viewer, I'm changing as what I will accept when I'm watching TV. And I feel like, I don't know if it's just me or if there's also like a shift in general audience in general. Like for me personally, if a show has less than three POC, like person of color roles in the show, I'm not interested.
Person of character.
They are
that too.
No more cardboard cutouts.
But like, if, you know, I feel less invested if it's a show. Oh, this brand new show on such and such channel, and all of the main cast is white. I'm not really interested. And like, no one token like black person in the cast is not going to cut it, because it's usually a black male anyway. And so there's no hope for me that will lead to something else. So for me, if they have less than three, it has to be like a really like strong, out of the box kind of story or points. There has to be some like astronomical reason why I would still be interested in watching
it. Like the final season of Game of Thrones.
Right. Like some like fantastical, you know, mythical magic story, whatever. And even if they have less than three, one of those two is a woman of color. That like counts as like double bonus points. Because I think like I watched The Punisher. He has Curtis, who was a black male friend to The Punisher.
Frank Castle.
Like, name is not coming out right now. But, you know, at him, he was kind of like a recurring character. But the other character was Dina Madani, and she was a woman of color. She was a woman of character. She had a but she was a woman of color, and so that kind of like doubled for me. So, like, even if it's less than two, like, less than three is borderline, but if one of those is a woman of color and then she's treated with respect in the narrative, then I'm more interested in watching, like, those stories. And so I feel like audiences as well are more interested in seeing more diversity in their media, which is great because it kind of forces the, like, TV shows. Hollywood will still make the same cookie-cutter TV shows, but I don't think that they get same hype now that they probably would have when people were like me were just accepting the fact that there was no diversity in the show. Like May was saying, well, a lot of these dramas that are like really diversity centered are mostly on ABC, so like congratulations ABC for being ahead of the curve and like leading the way in providing a more diverse network, and hopefully the rest of the networks will catch on. CW's got like The Flash as their flagship show for diversity, and then you've got like
Jane the Virgin for Latinas,
Jane the Virgin, which has been critically acclaimed. Then you've got like Black Lightning coming on, and all these kind of, you know, Marvel has The Runaways and The Gifted, even though the main focus is still on the white family, but there's, you know, enough characters of color. They pass the three rule because they've got Blink and they've got John and they've got Marcos. So there's three of them there, and one of them is one color, so that's, like, double points. But, you know, there's enough there for me to, like, stick through longer to see if it's going to go somewhere, if they're really going to invest in those characters of color. I kind of wish or hope for more opportunities for Black women, of course, because I am one, and more three-dimensional Black women like Iris. That's not just, like, a character cut out. I'm hoping for more young women to get opportunities that they don't have to struggle with all these bit parts like Viola and Carrie and Octavia had to do before they, and Taraji, before they break through. So I think they're, like you guys said, there's a lot of progress, but there's still, like, a lot that needs to be done. Hopefully, like, the trend will keep moving into the positive direction. Any of you ladies have any, like, final words, final thoughts before I wrap this up?
I love all of you guys, both of you here and all of you listening, especially the ones who are going to be like, yes, I totally understand, and here is my story about being a woman of color in the DC TV fandom. Please share those.
Yes.
Yeah.
We would love to hear from you.
Yeah, definitely. If you listen to them, you're like, yeah, like, that totally makes sense. I agree with that. I've had, like, stories of my own. Like, we definitely love to hear those as well. And again, like I was saying, that's kind of like why I felt the push to kind of put together this podcast with these two ladies, because it is kind of like a niche that you don't really get to hear our perspectives in normal media. So it's kind of like a safe place. It's my she authority space, if you will, to kind of like share it with these ladies. And so we want you to be a part of the conversations as well. That's why we always ask for your feedback. But that is our topics for this week. I hope you managed to get through all of it and, like, had fun listening to it. And, you know, you can always share your feedback with us via Twitter at DCTVGumption. Send us emails, ladieswgumption@gmail.com. On Tumblrs, Falling in Love in a Flash, Valerie M. Pettis, or Her Own Hero Writer. Next week is the week before premiere week, so we're going to probably get into recapping where we left off and, you know, if there's any new news on where we think the series are going to go. And we're also going to, because Black Lightning is going to be premiering on January 16th, make sure you watch it on the CW, going into a little bit of that as well. So stick around, come back, see us next week, and I hope you guys have a great day. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.